Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I've had a lot of extra time on my hands during the quarantine, as I'm sure you guys have. I've been doing things like cleaning my room, cooking dinner more. But I've also had a lot more time to manscape.
Oh!
Gross.
Yeah, wait, what?
Sometimes I clean my room.
Yeah, what's going on here?
I'm saying, like, you know, during the course of a week, you're like, man, I didn't have enough time to go to the gym today. I didn't have enough time to manscape today. But when we're quarantined... When we're quarantined, there's no excuse. You have all the time.
So
wait,
you manscape daily? It's just like shaving
during
your
face. During quarantine, it could be daily. During quarantine, it could be daily, my friend.
Wow.
It could be daily.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm able to do that because Manscaped hooked us up with an awesome package, the Perfect Package 3.0 kit, and you guys can get yours for 20% off when you use the code DNVR20. At manscaped.com. We good to go? We good?
Be good? I cut out.
I think
for
we're
a
good.
God.
Yeah, we're good.
Everybody being on the internet right now is really
It's specifically your internet. Your internet is like a mega trend.
It's so weird. I just went to Xfinity and got like an upgraded thing, and it still is the worst internet of everybody. It doesn't get. They told me it was the fastest internet that you can have.
The fastest commerce.
That's
city.
What they tell you every time. They've told me that for the last 2 years.
This is pretty
the
good.
Subscription.
This is like a pretty good internet.
They're lying. They're lying.
Oh yeah, we're gonna up your internet big time.
They know that we don't know how it works, so they're like, no, this is faster for sure.
That's why you gotta pay
more. Like, would you like 3 months of the Encore channel? Like, I don't know. I guess. Yeah, sure. I'll take
sure.
that. Yeah. What's on there? No, okay. All right. Well, welcome and everybody to the DNVR Nuggets podcast. All right, applause.
Yay.
Round of applause. Yeah. I'm your host, Adam Mattes. I'm joined to my top left, as always, it's Eric Weedham.
Hooray, hooray, yay!
To my bottom right, it's Harrison Wynn.
Hyped to be here just because I did not have to watch Rasul Butler for 4 quarters tonight.
Man, that's some real talk. We're going to get into that real fast. And then, of course, as always, last but not least, Brendan Vogt.
Rasul Butler was like the third option on that team. So.
So, he was a little underrated, if I might say.
Oh, God. We're really the quarantine is asking too long if we are talking about Rasul
Let's
Butler
talk
being underrated.
2009
Wait, that's
Hornets.
Two-way player, 40 minutes.
Yeah, I was actually very excited to never talk about the 2009 Hornets again, and here we are. Tonight we just wrapped up watching game one of the second round, the Western Conference semifinals against the Nuggets and the Mavericks, and the Nuggets cleaned up, took care of business in a 14-point dominant win. I was shocked. Shocked to see the Nuggets come out the gate and storm the gate. But it was fun. It was so the Mavericks go 4-1 in their first round series against, I think, Portland. And they arrive at
San Antonio, I think.
Oh, San Antonio, you're right. San Antonio's. Denver goes 4-1. So you get a matchup that on paper at least was kind of exciting, kind of interesting. You also just get a lot more like good players. Am I cutting out on you guys?
No.
No, we're with you.
Oh, Eric?
Yeah, there's way more talent. There's way more players that are fun to watch. Even an older Jason Kidd, he's in that crafty, canny fit stage where he's super fun to watch, you know? The Hornets had like two
Jason
guys.
Kidd, like, Jason Kidd, big, like, white old guy at the YMCA vibes in this series.
Yeah.
That little short runner. off the bank he had in like the there's nothing better than
an aging point guard that like turn like Andre Miller or Jason Kidd that turns wily and they turn away from their athletic roots. It's like so much more interesting.
That's what you like, huh? The old. So you're really going to advocate for Chris Paul down the stretch. That's what you want to see.
I guess I do. I think I just like to. I want to see all of his insurance agent friends come and be seen at the Pepsi Center.
By the way, did you guys, by now I hope you've listened to the George Karl episode of it. He is a huge advocate for Chris Paul coming to Denver. Like, it kind of sounded like it was more about they should have in the past. Maybe that train has sailed, but he's big into, and he kind of sold me on the idea, to be honest with
you. He totally did. Yeah, he was saying also that he thought he could have him, he could be had this year.
Right. Yeah. He just went to Oklahoma. Sure. Oh, you're saying this offseason coming up?
Well, I think before the trade deadline, I think that he was saying that they could have.
Yeah, I agree. It seemed like he was saying they should have traded for him prior to the deadline. That's what I took away from
the only thing is we know that you would have to have given up something for him, like something good, and just like, come on, man. Minnesota, Portland, Utah, that really would have completed the set to go to Oklahoma City and just giving them like Gary Harris and Malik Beasley and Wancho. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? Like,
yeah, but wouldn't it have been better? So.
The other thing about Karl that I thought was interesting was he said that Paul would work alongside Murray. Mm-hmm. And initially, when reacting to like on Twitter or interpreting his tweets, I thought he meant Paul instead of Murray.
Right.
So it was interesting to see that that's his mindset. I mean, defensively, you'd have a lot of issues, but that offense would be.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't you have preferred that we cashed in Wancho and Malik Beasley along with another piece or two and gotten Chris Paul as opposed to who did we get again?
Jordan McRae. Jordan McRae.
The 21st Shabazz pick Napier. In the draft.
Yeah, and.
No, Shabazz Napier's been good for Denver.
Yeah.
I heard Jordan McRae was a great locker
room. No, seriously, though, yeah, that's it is funny. I do feel like the number one thing from watching that New Orleans, I guess if to put a button on it, we did watch the final game in that game five, was just watching a real point guard run a show. You're just like, yeah, you always – it almost feels like having a great point guard elevates your floor. You're always good. No matter what, your team's going to be solid. And then everybody shows up, you're great. But
yeah.
I do wonder if that's the thing. Like right now, Jokic is the floor raiser. Like when he's on, your team is – at least a 500 team, no matter what else happens.
My God, George Karl was so interesting to listen to. Like, his thoughts on Jokic being that everything he said, I was like, that's exactly correct. That's exactly what I thought and have thought but could never put into words. Like, when he was saying that Jokic likes to have the responsibility, but he does not want all of the responsibility.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, that's, like, the perfect way to phrase that.
And I think a lot of that has to do – with being a big, though. Because I do think Jokic wants the ball to go through him, but I think it has a lot to do with just like, if you can't get him the ball in an easy spot for him, then he has to go out of his way to orchestrate it in ways he doesn't want to. And I think that was even more the point. I think if Chris Paul came here, I don't think Jokic is going to be standing in the corner. I think it's more just about like, you know where I want the ball at the free throw line, and Chris Paul can get me that without me having to like do something crazy just to get there. I think that's really kind of what he's hinting at.
Well, did you guys see how easily Dirk got the ball in this series?
Oh, yeah.
Especially in the first half, wherever he wanted it, on the elbows, on the wing. Because he had Jason Kidd passing the ball.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it's a really great point.
Underrated aspect of Dirk's career, playing with young Steve Nash, late Jason Kidd, some good point guards for him. Makes a big difference for a dynamic big.
Before we go, let's do this. Let's move on to the Dallas series in segments 2 and 3, because I kind of want to hang on the George Karl. So if you didn't listen, on Friday we had George Karl on the show, and it was an hour-long conversation, a little over an hour.
It was
and
he excellent, just dropped, excellent show.
I thought he just – I thought so too. He dropped a lot of gems, including about the American healthcare system, which I was not expecting. I did not expect right him right gate. Out the gate to have some takes there. No, but he was just fascinating, and I think we obviously have a reflective George Karl right now. But we also have, like, he's still opinionated. Like, it was funny to me, whenever you interview a person like this, I'm always like, okay, well, are they not going to say anything? Are they going to play it safe? Are they going to, like, tip? He just went right into anything he wanted. Like, let's just – he actually asked the Jamal Murray question. I had it ready to go, but he was like, let's just get into it because I'm sure you've seen what I've said. The Nuggets need a point guard. And it was just fascinating. And I'm with you, Eric. I don't – you know – I think I not only did I agree with a lot of what he said, I just thought he had some really interesting perspectives on a bunch of different things that I don't know. It was fascinating. I want to hear more from George.
Me too. He's not somebody that I ever thought of as, and I don't know why I didn't, but I never really thought of him as being like a super hyper basketball intellectual. I just sort of thought he was just kind of a hot-headed coach and sort of lost control of his team. And he had a bunch of misfits that just ran the court and did as they pleased. But listening to him talk and the way that he was explaining his philosophy and like being able to see how it was applied to the way that he was managing these games, I was like, wow, I cannot believe what a raw deal George Karl got in general. Like, he was really dealt like a terrible set of cards. And the fact that he got fired the year after he won Coach of the Year, it's crazy. I was so intrigued by it. And he was just so interesting to listen to. And there's something about being like in the latter part of your life and going through what he's gone through with his cancer and everything that really puts you in a place where, and he said it more than once, and he named his podcast this, Truth in Basketball. He's only interested in telling the truth. Like, there's no spin with George Karl. It's really refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely self-spin, I think.
There's some spin.
Truth. Well, that's true.
But still, that's valuable. Like, he's not going to filter what he believes.
True.
That's what you mean. I think... So I was thinking about this a lot throughout the course of this last season, because Scott Brooks just led a ragtag group of nobodies to one of the best offenses in the NBA. And when he had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, he did not do that. And I wonder if part of this is, and I actually believe this wholeheartedly, that so much of the NBA is like, these players have a lot of power. And
yeah, we don't.
Yeah, go ahead.
We don't know if like, Durant and Westbrook iso ball in the fourth was Brooks' decision. Right. You know, if Brooks had his way, it might have looked quite different. But how do you tell Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook what to do?
And I think it's the same, perhaps even with George Karl, where, you know, I think and you could tell from listening to him, he would love to have a Jokic. I mean, he would just be so excited to be like, look at this like multi-tool I have to do with creative stuff, and he's so willing to pass and share the ball. But sometimes you just have J.R. Smith, and you're like, What does it matter what play I call? And it does kind of remind me a little bit, Melo and JR, just the whole vibe of this team really keeps bringing me back to Michael Porter Jr. Because I see a lot of Michael Porter and Carmelo, and we'll probably talk about that here in a little bit. But I do wonder if there's just a little bit of, Malone probably would love to do a lot of different things. It's what can he accomplish? And what does he know that he can accomplish, rather than maybe just always what does he believe? I don't know. Such a good point. Nobody had a response.
I thought the most interesting thing that George Karl had to say, and we talked about this a little on Monday's show, but when it seemed like he was saying how he had some regret in terms of how he handled Melo, how he handled JR, specifically JR, he was like, man, should I have just been playing this guy 30 minutes instead of playing him 20 minutes off the bench every night? What could he have been? So I just thought him just... from like a reflection standpoint was super interesting, because he's at that time in his life now when he's obviously reflecting back on his 40-year career in the NBA and probably has a lot of regret. I just thought what he said about Melo and JR, I thought that was fascinating.
And I feel like JR kind of is the victim of like a self-fulfilling prophecy that maybe he wasn't even always writing. I mean, he is who he is, and so that we know that now, right? Like, with the benefit of hindsight. But was there a version of JR, like, every single time he put a shot up, the broadcast crew ripped the shot, even if it was a great shot?
After Harrison pointed that out after the first game, that any shot that he put up, the broadcaster would just be like, oh, JR shooting again. It's so true.
Right, because you're like, oh, JR, we all know the JR thing. But underneath that was a top 15, top 20 talented player at his peak. And he was that good, but that was his talent level. So was JR... inevitable, or if coaches and fans and the media viewed him differently, is there another version of him out there?
It reminds me a lot of JaVale McGee, because you remember the big beef JaVale had with Shaq, just saying like, dude, you've turned me into this thing. Like, am I goofy? Sure. Am I a little off, a little different, but you've turned me into this one-dimensional character. And it's true. Like, JaVale would do things that were like moderately funny, and they would turn him into a bit, like on Shaq'd in a Fool or whatever. He was like, every week he was on it. And Steve Kerr even made this point about JaVale of like, look, man, yeah, he's funny, but there's more to him. He's actually a pretty smart and thoughtful person. But everybody just thinks he's this dumbass. So I wonder, there is probably at least a little bit of that with JR, but at the same time, guys, he takes ridiculous shots, like 5 a game, where he just does something completely and totally absurd.
Do you guys remember when JR actually tried to change his name to Earl?
No.
His given name?
I don't remember this.
Yeah. He tried to, like, go by Earl.
It's true.
I think, you know, in, I don't know, 2012, 2013, maybe.
Earl's a real just classic because name.
Earl Smith.
But just similar to the JaVale McGee thing. He was just known as that guy.
Yeah.
And I think he was trying to shed that stigma a little bit.
Earl's a 1950s name right there. That's a really throw. That's a real throwback.
There was no way anybody was going to call J.R. Smith Earl. He was fighting a real uphill battle.
His friends were probably like, "Dude, we're going to keep it real. We're not going to call you Earl."
Did that have something to do with, like, his dad? Like, he wanted, because that has to be his dad's name too, right? Earl Smith. That's why he's or is he Junior? Is that what JR is all about?
JR is Junior. Yes, JR is Junior. But
JR's first name is Earl.
Well, that's what I mean. But so, like,
thank you for that clarification.
Yeah.
Jeez, Harrison. You know another part that
I don't know if it was his father's name. I'm not sure.
Another part of the George Karl thing, and I guess we can wrap up this first segment with this, but one of the other things, actually two more things, that I found really interesting, him talking about Chauncey, and I just love the thing where he said, within 2 weeks of Chauncey arriving, we knew this team was, we were a winner. And I really wonder if the Nuggets this year, I'm a big believer in teams kind of know what they have. Like, everybody's irrationally confident in the NBA. But I do think that there's this underlying second-level confidence, not just your regular confidence, but your second-level confidence, where people are like, we have something special. And I thought the Nuggets had that last year, in part because they knew they were getting over the hump, but not just over the hump. Like, we're better than people realize, whatever. And I wonder if that was lacking this year, and it was like an unspoken, like, everybody kind of felt it. Like, yeah, we don't have whatever the inverse of the Chauncey thing was. They had it.
It's possible. There's also, like, a lot less joy this season than there was last season for the Nuggets. So, like, remember, like, 3-2-1 party time and, like, all of these moments where the team was, like, celebrating. We got shots from the locker room and you just felt like very, I don't know. It just felt like there was something to be excited about. And, you know, it's not that it wasn't there this year for them, but it just felt steady and it felt boring. It felt like a job you've had for a while, right?
Oh yeah.
Totally. Well, it's because last year was all about making the playoffs. So the entire year was about the regular season. This year, and I've said this before, this team was looking ahead to the playoffs from the day they broke ground on training camp.
That is fair. That's very October. Fair. This could have been the veteran team now that's just like, yeah, this stuff doesn't matter. You guys are going to freak out about February 8th, but we aren't. Maybe.
But I do think on the opposite end of, like, analytical, you know, that spectrum of evaluating basketball is there is that feeling of, ooh, this team has something. And maybe that's not championship, but something. Like, the way Tirico was talking about the Nuggets and the way they advanced past the first round and how fun it was for Denver to be back, whether that team won a title or not, and we know they didn't, people were looking at them that way. You know what I mean? Ooh, there's something brewing here.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Cooking.
And you saw...
And whatever that is, whether that's real or not, if you can quantify that or put your finger on it, I do think it was lacking this year for Denver.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, I don't know if you picked up on the graphic that they were showing, but the Nuggets were the only thing going in town as far as sports were concerned. Like, the other sports were in the dump. Yeah. And so... you know, last year in the playoffs, like, the support was strong, but it was a little soft. And I think it's because the Nuggets were sharing the spotlight with the Avs. Exactly. And so, like, at this point in time where Ryan Koenigsberg was creating his own Birdman mohawk. And, like, I mean, Brendan, when you would walk into the stadium, there'd be like 6 D-lines out there, like, hawking shirts of Birdman that they'd made, like, trying to sell you stuff. And, like, I have a Mellow shirt that I bought outside of Pepsi Center. I had a Birdman shirt. I had a Chauncey shirt that I bought, like, from all these, like, these street vendors, like, because people were in, and it was like a big deal. Like, it was the big ticket.
There were so many characters, though, that, like, who would you dress up as if you were going to dress up as a current Nugget player? Like, Birdman was such a costume. Everybody did the Birdman. Everybody in Colorado between the ages of, you know, 6
yes.
and 22 dressed up as Birdman for one Halloween during this run.
Yes.
Who would you dress up as now? Like, Mason Plumlee? Like, what does that even look like?
Yeah, who would you dress up? Like, there's no characters on this team. Like, zero.
Just go as Bol Bol. Wear Adams clothes.
He's not even on the team.
Yeah, kind of. No, the other thing that the last thing we can go up, move on to commercial here, Lynn, you can queue up. The other thing with George Carl, I thought, was I genuinely got the sense that he was interested in the Nuggets, you know, kept tabs on the Nuggets. He kept calling himself a fan. He said, I'm a Nuggets fan. And I thought to me, he desperately wants back in. Like, you know, he wants the acceptance again, I think from the fan base primarily, but, you know, the gatekeeper to that is Josh Kroenke and the Denver Nuggets organization. And look, I put this on Twitter. I don't care who was in the right or who was in the wrong. I think there's a lot of, like, people that probably have a lot of egos that were mixed up in all of that sort of circumstance in that moment. But as a fan, I just want to see George Karl not be shunned and banned. I want to see him at Pepsi Center, like Peyton Manning is every now and when, where they throw him on the Jumbotron and everybody cheers. Like, that's, I just want to get to that point because I think it's important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like a bad breakup where you know, you see somebody, you have a terrible breakup, and then you have to block each other on social media, and like slowly over time you run into each other. It's not as weird, not as weird. You have friends that like are talking to each other, and then after a while you're like, like George Carl was in that place of acceptance where he's like, I don't care. Like, I want to see him.
Yeah. Who do you want to be, the Lakers or the Knicks? Because the Lakers have like seven decades of legacy, and everybody's welcome into the arena. And anytime when any of the guys come back, it's like, hey, this Laker legend. There's a thread that runs through every single era. There you have the Knicks, where Charles Oakley is getting kicked out of the arena by the, you know, and like there's public spats between him and the owner. And it's like, guys, the Knicks also have history. They just don't celebrate any of it. And there's like, and the Nuggets aren't as bad as the Knicks, thank God. But it's, for me, I'm just like, you know what? I want to see George Karl. He's a huge piece. There's three successful eras in Nuggets history. He's part of one of them.
Well, I mean,
like, can we just have him back? He's one of the only guys alive, you know, like that you can still honor in this way.
I mean, they just retired.
Brendan's saying move on because he's not interested in this conversation. I think it's super fascinating.
No, I just want to get to an ad read. It's just time to keep moving.
No, I think more than enough time has passed, and he'd get a standing O, a long standing O, like a full 60-second standing ovation if he was at a game. They showed him on the
Just the Nuggets have a history of just being really slow to this. Like, it took them a long time to retire numbers, and like, so I don't know.
You know who would come out?
Enough time has passed, and just the fact that the Nuggets are a good team.
You know who would come out looking really, really good
and have a good coach?
Is Josh Kroenke. He would come out looking really, really good for bringing him out and celebrating him. So anyway, Harrison, take us away.
Guys, right now at Breck Brew, they've been a partner of ours for a long time, and we're asking you to help them out. Everybody's struggling a little right now in the times that we're in, but the Breck Brew Farmhouse is still open, located in Littleton. They're doing special curbside pickup. They got a special menu that they're doing right now. Give them a call, 303-803-1380. They just expanded their delivery radius, so they're delivering more places in Denver now. And they're also offering $5 off your food and beverage purchase when you use the code DNVR at the farmhouse. Tons of awesome stuff on the menu, so make sure to give them a call, 303-803-1380.
So what does that mean, use the code when you're on the phone? You just mentioned that?
You just mentioned DNVR. Cool.
You say, I have the code.
I have the code. And don't make me say it.
The 18-year-old at the counter goes, what?
And also, guys, support Bojo's as well.
Harrison's on like a five-second delay somehow over there. You guys noticed?
I have noticed that. It's throwing me off.
And he's always like looking like so intently into the camera, like, what? Okay. Sorry. You'll catch this in a second, Harrison. Hold on.
All right.
There you go.
Do you guys want to shut up and let me do this read? Or
please.
Kind of, yeah.
All right. Great. So Bojo's has also upped their offer in the times that we're in. They're offering 30% off takeout orders at all of their 6 Colorado locations. DoorDash, of course, also delivers Bojo's, and they're also offering to-go orders at, like I said, all 6 of their locations. 30% off takeout. All you gotta do is ask for it. I don't even think you have to use a DNVR code. And they'll give you 30% off. So support Bojo's, support Breck Brew, and Also, another shout out to Manscaped. Support Manscaped in these times too.
I think Harrison's in the times that we're in bit is my favorite reoccurring bit.
It's so good.
All right, guys, let's move on to this game. Game one, Nuggets Mavs. Number one note I have. Everybody, just pull out your notebooks or whatever. Number one note I have. First thing, no T-shirt giveaway. I'm going to note this every time they do it because it even, you know, I think there maybe there's a thing with a cheap organization that says, you know what, we do one T-shirt giveaway, everybody forgets, nobody will talk about this. No, 11 years later, I'm pointing out that we saw the Hornets have this T-shirt giveaway. We've seen the Portland Trailblazers every single night's a giveaway. The Nuggets, no giveaway. And it stands out because that was a great crowd. But it looks so much cooler when everybody's in blue or gold or whatever.
I will say that I did. I spilled my Strava iced coffee, which is true, the other day. I spent 15 minutes making the perfect Strava craft coffee, and then I spilled it on the floor almost immediately. And then I used a Nuggets towel that I got
It came in handy.
One of those games to clean it up.
Wow, see, there you go. Stick with the towels, Nuggets. Yeah. People are responding.
Glad you brought that up, Eric, because I actually think towels are a better
Wow. Hot take. We got to update Wins.
In the
list.
Times are towels. Wins.
Towels are on
when
Wins.
When you got those towels spinning at a playoff game, way more effective than everybody wearing the
Unbelievable.
Same
it's not
effective.
About it.
Just it creates a way better environment.
It's not about the efficacy. It's about the what you're left with. Although, I think I just argued for towels also on accident.
Yeah, practice. You can't box it up with your shirt. That doesn't work.
Would you rather a shirt that just has the Elevate like logo on
no,
it?
No, definitely not the Elevate.
I'll take a towel.
I'll take a towel. Right. I'm talked into it.
The towel is cool. The Thunder Sticks, not cool. That's too. It's like those are annoying. I think Thunder Sticks are. Lighted wristbands. Those are also cool.
That was very cool. Those were very cool. Yeah.
Those played well last year. I thought.
Whoever created that is a freaking billionaire now.
Probably not. That's probably not what it was. My other note I have from right off the bat, this is maybe 3 minutes into the game. Kenyon just hip checks Dirk and looks at him. Like, no reason.
For no reason.
So great.
No reason. Well, the game's not even chippy yet.
There was a reason. It was just kind of be like, this is how we're doing this tonight.
Welcome to Denver. Welcome.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that. Like a tone setter early on. Yeah. And then... You know, he let him right off the bat, this is going to be a physical series, and, you know, the first game.
And then Dirk responded with, like, 7 straight points
sure
in his mouth.
he really did.
This team was not going to get punked. They were going to punk other teams.
It's one thing if, like, maybe someone took a cheap shot at Chauncey or Melo and you're retaliating. Like, Kmart was just bored 5 minutes into the game.
I don't even think it's bored, though, man. I'm telling you, I do think it was a message that I'm just like, yo, I'm here to use up all 6 of my fouls. There's one.
Yeah.
Like, they only get bigger from here. Just like, I think there's something to it.
No layups.
If you don't get a tech, like, you have to do it without getting a tech. But if you don't get a tech, you really send that message of like, yep, they're all going to hurt, bro.
Like, would you have been surprised if Kmart and Dante Jones came together in the locker room before this game and were like, all right, game one, we got to send a message in the first couple minutes of this game? No, they definitely did.
And I also noticed the Mavericks didn't really, like, no one got in his face.
Nope.
You know?
Nope.
No one really wanted to send a message or retaliate
at
all.
No, this team was intimidating. They were intimidating.
Maybe that does
like in the locker room before this current Nuggets team would go to a playoff game, they'd be like, we need to send this guy a message on Twitter. And then it was just like,
I know. Who is the Plumlee really is the closest to an enforcer.
Oh, my God.
You know what's funny? This is the series. It's great to go back because this series is kind of like recalibrating my brain. I think I needed it, like, to go back because Plumlee would do this stuff sometimes in the regular season where he would just give a really dumb foul. And I'd always be like, oh, Plumlee's in for 10 seconds and he fouled. But, like, then another part of me is now I'm watching it and I'm going, like, you know, maybe that's Plumlee's attempt to do that. Now, I don't know if a guy from Duke as nice as Plumlee can be the guy. I don't know if that's how it works.
I know that he absolutely cannot. You know who our enforcer is? Is Michael Malone. That's the closest we have.
It is true.
Sometimes Torrey Craig does it by accident.
I know. He apologizes as soon as it happens.
See, Torrey Craig's a super nice guy. And then also just like, Torrey Craig can be your Dante Jones, I guess. I don't know that he can be the only guy. I don't know that
you're right. It's probably Jordan McRae.
we're really just circling around the fact that we need a Morris brother.
I know.
Team.
Oh my
God. We do.
That's what we're circling around.
I kind of think they need like three.
Yeah. Are there three? Yeah, are there three Morris brothers?
They also have to play too. That's the problem. They actually have to play.
Yeah. Who is the number one? I will fight you right here and now. NBA player
all time
today
or currently?
Right now, currently. In the league. I don't feel like we have a ton. Yeah, but I kind of feel like they like to talk. I feel like, you know what I mean? Like, who's that guy whose rep
really
is like,
bad at?
Actually, maybe you shouldn't do that. For James Johnson, I think, kind of has
James
that
Johnson
rep a little
for sure.
Bit.
But he's maybe more like in real life, not necessarily on the court.
Right, right.
In real life,
my
will.
Point being, there's not as many of those
Bobby
guys,
Portis.
Though, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Bobby Portis actually hospitalized a teammate. Like,
and sent him
and
out of
the
NBA.
Other guy
he left the NBA.
That's too funny, man. So maybe Bobby Portis, those crazy eyes.
God, he's terrifying.
Jokic's brothers tried to fight him one time.
Can we get Jokic's brothers on the team? That would probably solve all of our problems.
Oh, man. I have a feeling they would both send these fouls every game,
oh,
no matter what the
circumstance. It would be incredible.
They would get suspended for leaving the bench within the first 5 minutes of game one.
They just jump
Jokic.
Yeah.
They would have, like, choreographed attacks where they would, like the... Yeah. Like the British... Or what were the old... Those wrestlers, the...
The Road Warriors, the Road Dogs, whatever.
How do you guys know this stuff?
You're totally wrong.
Another note that I have from this one. This is a downer. I saw Sparky Gonzalez is in a shot there, who's the Nuggets equipment manager, and I know him as an old guy because he's still with the team. He's been with the team for 30 years, and he looks.
Does he look the same?
He looks my age, and I just keep looking at this, going like, it's only been a decade. And this is
you've got like 8 years left.
And that's what I mean. Like, in 10 years, I'm gonna be looking down at this and just be like, look how young Adam is. Now I'm a 50-year-old man and just like checking in on my grandkid. Like, I don't know. It was very disturbing to see like how quickly the passage of time, you know, hits.
Well, don't worry about it. None of these games are gonna be on TV or YouTube.
It's true.
It's fine.
Well, I also did see Nugget security guy Bobby on the screen, and he does not look like he's aged a day.
Oh, I could believe that. I could really believe that.
Speaking of aging, can we acknowledge Rick Carlisle with hair?
Oh, wow. God, yes, let's get into
it.
We forget almost how much Rick Carlisle looked like Jim Carrey. Young Rick Carlisle, dead ringer. There's people that share similarities, and like I could see that. It could be a younger brother, you know, it could be whatever. No. He could sneak into a club as Jim Carrey and they'd be like,
for sure.
Mr. Carrey, if there's anything you need, we have it for you.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's true.
He's also not half as intimidating with hair. He's so much scarier without it. It's unbelievable.
It's so true. When he first came on the screen, weren't you like, dude, that's fake? That hair looks fake.
Yes,
like, he's wearing some kind of weird wig. Like, what is this?
Yeah,
his hair looks way too perfect.
Way too perfect.
Unbelievable.
You get Terry Stotts also on the sideline there, who's a George Karl disciple. You got a lot of basketball.
Yeah, but that's
in there.
That's the funny thing about aging. Like, at a certain point, you just stop aging. Like, if you're Hubie Brown. Like, Hubie Brown has been the exact same age for the last 20 years, which is just old. And Rick Carlisle...
God bless Hubie Brown.
Rick Carlisle has aged, you know, 50 years in the last 9 years. So I don't know how the hell that's worked out.
So the meat...
I have another hair.
Please. On a delay.
Dirk's hair was absolutely
luscious.
Luscious. And I remember this note about Dirk's hair. I can't remember where I read it, but he would always cut his hair at the beginning of the season so it would grow out to this length for the playoffs. And it would like really be flowing come playoff time, which I thought was awesome.
Man, we need Jokic to do something like this.
I know, but like, why deny yourself this flowing hair at the beginning of the season? You can maintain this length the entire year.
You got to earn it.
By just being alive.
The playoffs. If you get out of the playoffs, you got to shave your head again. It's like a shame. Shed the shame of shame. The meat of this game, though, this is another game where Carmelo was very good in the fourth, but Chauncey, you know, just was okay. I mean, he ran the show. He didn't really stand out. This was another game where it was just like the others. You know, the story, Birdman got our game ball, and I think deservedly so. Six block shots was just everywhere. Anthony Carter, who has become a punchline in Denver Nuggets lore, was incredible.
He was a great, so good. And Nene, right after you tweeted at him about how he was worse than you remembered.
His footwork. He did travel again, though, after I put that out there.
He did. That's true. But 18 first half points.
He had two of the hardest slams that I remember seeing at the Pepsi Center also.
In 2020, we always talk about, like, well, depth doesn't matter as much in the playoffs and all that. I mean, three bench players won that game.
Totally.
So true.
I know it.
We say the dumbest stuff. Yeah. I swear to God. They become maxims, and it's just like, well, everything slows down.
They're like, yeah. Bench player. It's bad to have a bunch of good players. That's a thing you don't want.
What jumped off the screen to me about Nene was he was so much quicker than Eric Dampier.
Yeah. Well,
and this was in that era in the NBA where every team felt like they needed to carry 3 7-footers just for the hell of it. You know, just to eat up minutes at the five. Oh, we need a 7-footer on the floor at all times. Like, remember those Miami teams? They had Dampier, Joel Anthony. All these just terrible 7-footers just eating up minutes. It was just like this weird age of the NBA where every team thought they had to have 2 or 3 of them.
Eric Dampier was living out a nightmare in game one. My God. That man is glued to the... He's like a rhinoceros with a torn ACL. He's just not getting off the ground.
And like, Melo rejected him twice at the rim.
Yeah,
that was not great. It was not a great look for Eric.
Noted defensive, elite defensive rim protector, Melo.
I said this to Hastings one time, where and he got pissed at me. I mean, like, truly, actually mad at me, because I think but I said there used to be, and I think Dampier is one of these guys. Look, they have talent. I'm not saying they don't have talent, but the talent was so narrow. It was such a narrowly focused, like, he's big and he can rebound and he can get physical, whatever. Like, that was it. And I just said there's always been, like, every team has one guy whose job is just to be big or whatever.
And he was like, you talk about me, boy. Let's go Hastings right now.
Dude, I'm telling you, he came across. I love Hastings. I love that dude. He came across Pepsi Center at me, and I'm like, hey, Scott, what's going on? I heard what you said on the radio. And I was like, oh, my God. But my point is, Dampier is that guy. Like, he just is like a really big-bodied, strong guy that, like...
But kind of useless.
Yeah, especially in hindsight. I mean, there's a lot of hindsight going on. There's a lot of, like, Josh Howard in the first quarter of this game takes back-to-back shots with his feet on the line again. The off-the-dribble pull-up jumpers with his foot on the three-point line, where you're just like, why?
That was just so classic Josh Howard. That's what I think of when I think of Josh Howard.
What a trip. What a trip watching Josh Howard again, too. That was fun. He's one of those guys you forget about until someone says his name and you know a lot about him, right? But how quickly do you forget about him?
He's a guy I want to
know. Because he absolutely fell off the map after this season.
And that's why I want to see if he's actually good.
Yeah.
Right. Him rolling his ankle, though, is you know, so he rolls an ankle in the first quarter. So much about the series, and it was true of the first one, where I just wanted to be like, okay, what was the storyline? What happened that really put it on? And I'm not saying it would have changed the whole series, changed the outcome, but... You know, Josh Howard's pretty important, probably the third most important player on that team, maybe fourth if you want to put like Terry.
Yeah, he's the Rasul Butler of
the Rasul Butler too. But he gets injured like right away. He had been battling with an ankle injury, rolls it really bad, and like I really wonder if that affected the series. You know how it went. Nobody's there to guard Melo now.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I felt like the story of this game though was for a second straight game, and this also happened in Game 5 of the first round. Chris Anderson changed the game with one play. Yeah. And in Game 5, it was a block. And in this game, it was in the first quarter when he was guarding Dirk. And Dirk, like, did a couple pivots and threw up that air ball that I don't even think hit the backboard and just, like, went straight out of bounds. And the entire game changed after that. And what I was thinking about was in every interview that Chauncey did during this series, he was always talking about how the bench was, like, what Denver really leaned on. And it was true. The bench changed Game 5, and they changed this game as well.
Yeah, no, Birdman was incredible. You know what else he was really great at? The after big play celebration. Like,
so good.
He gets the crowd going. Like, I'm sure a block shot, and then he just kind of would stare at the camera, but not for 1 second, for like 5. Like, to not even get back into the play.
Not even playing. Yeah,
or he'd look like point directly at somebody in the crowd. It just was like he was so good at getting the crowd to be like, oh, hell yeah, let's do this.
Brendan,
I feel like that's a skill.
Brendan, did you have any indication that Birdman was this dope?
He was the first Denver Nugget that I like cared about.
Oh, okay, cool. So this is not
and
like
I remember
totally
watching
cold.
Back then. But I kind of remembered him more as like a fun sideshow act. Like watching this game, he was, I mean, the game ball was legitimate. Yeah. Some of those blocks were freaking.
It wasn't that just.
Did you have any indication that he also had a pull up jumper because he hit another one today?
Well, yeah, I listened to the DNVR Nuggets podcast. So.
But like, you know, he could have been a 3-point shooter in today's.
It's true, but yeah, like his blocks. It's not like he like got a finger on the ball. Like he swatted the ball, like just punished the ball. It was like incredible.
And he would jump from these like, be like, "There's no way that you're blocking that shot," and he would throw it.
To block everything, and so yeah, he would jump at some stuff. But there was one play, I think, like the refs called blow a whistle. And he jumps from like the free throw. The play's pretty much dead, and he jumps all the way over to block like this non play. And it's just like, yeah, that was his thing. He was so focused on blocking every shot that went up that he was going to try to block at least 50% of the shots that were taken. He tried to block.
I love it. I love Birdman. I cannot believe how much I love Birdman and how much I forgot I love Birdman this much. I'm going to apologize to Birdman on Twitter. Do we have his handle?
We need to get him on the show.
Is he on Twitter?
Absolutely.
We need to get Birdman. Yeah, he's definitely not. He's not on Twitter.
Birdman.
I don't think. Yeah. No, Birdman would be great. But as you mentioned, Anthony Carter also just phenomenal. And here's the storyline to me of this game. We get into the fourth quarter. I thought Nuggets didn't pull away. Like the Nuggets were outplayed the Mavs the whole game. But it was one of those games where like going into the fourth, Nuggets are up four, and you're like, man, I feel like they dominated. How are they only up 4 points here? But then they break it open, but they break it open behind Anthony Carter, J.R. Smith, and Birdman. And I'm trying to think, if we just go position for position, and really it kind of fits even stylistically, Monte Morris is Anthony Carter. Malik Beasley is J.R. Smith. I know he's not on the team anymore, but just roll with me for a second. And then Birdman is Mason Plumlee. Can you imagine those three guys closing out a playoff game, let alone game one of a playoff series? Like, I just can't imagine it, but that's what happened.
Last year I could. This year, obviously, I can't.
I mean, there's no way Mason Plumlee has that kind of an impact on a playoff.
No. Watching that, watching Birdman on the court, and then immediately thinking about how Mason Plumlee would be in the same position is just making me crazy. Like, trying to imagine just the energy injection and just like all of the things that just don't show up in the stat sheet where. You know, Birdman, like you're saying, like he turned the game around. Like things were dead, or at least they were. The Nuggets were down early, and then the bench came in and just all of a sudden, just immediately erased the deficit and like closed the door.
I think the Nuggets were Birdman was a plus 10 in the first half. I think the Nuggets were plus 10 after he checked in for the first time. So yeah, I mean, he turned the game around.
Yeah, I mean, and then also. Can we talk a little bit more about J.R. Smith? Like, J.R. Smith is so, like, he is so ridiculous, but, like, no one gets you hyper than J.R. Smith hitting, like, a shot that there's no reason on earth he should be taking, and then it just goes through with such force. Like, it doesn't touch any part of the rim or any of the net, I think.
At this rate, though, like, with how he shot in the playoffs, in those playoffs so far, watching, it's like, dude, green light. Like, shoot whenever you want, man.
And not only that, like, he's like...
JR was so, just so shifty, I felt like. Like, the way he moved, nobody moved in 2009, or very few players moved in 2009 like JR moved.
It's true. Like, he had a couple of finishes at the rim where he, I guess you would call it a Euro step. I don't remember hearing that term during that time, but where he, like, stepped around Jason Kidd in the lane and, like, did a super acrobatic finish. Like, it was unreal.
Denver Rubber Company, the most reliable local partner for your long-term projects. They've been doing it since 1972. Denver Rubber Company has provided the highest quality products from custom die-cut gaskets to molded rubber, custom contract manufacturing, and custom hoses. And you guys know Denver Rubber Company is your one-stop shop for anything that has to do with snowplows. Their blades can actually be cut to any length and slotted to meet your exact specifications. Call them today. For any snowplow needs, custom gaskets, hoses, etc., 1-800-259-0010. Or you can visit them at drcfirst.com/DNVR. Of course, tell them who sent you.
And we're back here on the DNVR Nuggets podcast. Go Adam Wise, Brendan Boat, joined by Eric Quito, D-Lanco.
That's right.
And Harrison Wind. Guys, I just, while we wait for Adam... I had some miscellaneous notes that I just kind of
lay them on us.
Love miscellaneous notes.
Eric, you hit on one of them already, that the Nuggets were the number one sports story in the range at the time. I just thought that was really interesting and good context for why the crowd was so hyped. It's not just that the Nuggets were back, but as we kind of saw last year, the formula for people caring about the Nuggets is not just them being good, but the Broncos struggling, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's... It wasn't as cut and dry as that, but I would say that the Nuggets were super popular the entire time Melo was here. Wouldn't you say, Harrison? Like, the Nuggets were the top story. As soon as we got that number three pick, like, you know, everyone was saying, you know, obviously that, you know, there was a good chance we were going to get LeBron when he was coming out, and obviously we didn't.
Oh yeah, the Nuggets back in this day were, I think, substantially more popular than they've been, you know, up until this season, and maybe even more popular than they were this season.
I would say this season feels
just the buzz in the town, everybody watching the games, you know, every night. It just had more buzz, I think, even than this season.
It's true. It's like the way that this town embraced Philip Lindsay this past season, where, you know, you see people wearing afros and things, like he's like a Halloween costume. I mean, that was Birdman back in the day, and like, but Melo was, as soon as Melo hit the scene, like Melo immediately the first year he came took us to the playoffs, and every year after, and the Nuggets felt like they were a legitimate something, you know, to actually worth paying attention to.
And part of that, like 2019's charm, I think, too, is you go out and you make a big name acquisition, but that's also a hometown guy in Chauncey. So you've gone and found talent externally, but it almost feels like an organic in-house move, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we made the big move the year before getting Allen Iverson. That felt like a big, big deal. Like, all of a sudden we were legitimized by bringing in, like, an actual, you know, NBA royalty. And then, exactly, trading him to get Chauncey Billups. It's a homecoming. Chauncey Billups had been the MVP of the NBA Finals. They'd been on top for a long time. He was Mr. Big Shot, like... And, you know, the fact that it worked, like, you know, it took a little while for all the pieces to come together. But, like, when it worked, it was just like, I don't know. The
blueprint.
Yeah, the Nuggets just switched.
Chauncey was Denver's.
Also, this team was so.
Chauncey was Denver's LeBron. Like, he's the only hometown kid that actually makes a difference.
It's so
true. You know, like, who else? Reggie Jackson is a Colorado guy.
Paul Millsap, apparently.
Well, I guess, yeah. Which nobody knew until he actually arrived here. And I was like, really? Had no idea.
Yeah, like, not. I wouldn't describe
Nick Fizikas, Lou Amundson. Like, none of, like, these guys are obviously talented to get into the league. Like.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe Colorado as a huge basketball Derek hotbed White. Outside of, you know, Derek White, Adam Mares.
The list is dropping Chauncey off Billups. Here really fast. Drop-off.
The Derek White thing was like got less and less.
Oh my god! As that series went on. Oh my god! It would have been the worst. Really, would have been the worst.
Completely unrelated note: did Hubie Brown call the Celtics Bulls first round series the greatest series in the history of the league? Did anyone?
Did he really?
That was I remember that every Derek game Rose, like went to overtime. Yeah. It was like super.
That is true. There was like three or four overtimes in that one series alone. So I guess if you like, we're trying to say like in a vacuum or something or whatever, you know, okay, but.
Sure. He said that and I tripled it. I was like, dude, you've been around a long time. So I don't know if
that's true. If anybody would know, it'd be Hubie.
But I do remember that series like being like super insane.
Really good. It was really fun. Yeah.
Another random note I had here, guys. John Elway introduced Chauncey Billups in the starting lineups, apparently, in this game as, quote, the new number seven. Can you imagine how lit Pepsi Center was for John freaking Elway doing the player introduction?
It was lit.
But, like, imagine if you were there and you heard it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that place was popping off. Also, can we get my guy John Elway, like, an actual... legit authentic NBA jersey, not some like
did he have a
knockoff
swingman
jersey? Was he rocking
a fake?
Wearing?
Oh jeez.
Yeah. It was bad.
My goodness. That is cool. In 94, I think it was game three or game four of that first round series where John Elway introduced in the lineup and then said, let's get ready to Mutombo.
Mutombo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the hallmark of any successful Nuggets playoff series is that John Elway has to announce at least one of the games. He has to come in.
What do you think it'd be like if John Elway was the lead person at the Nuggets playoff game? I just don't know if it would play that well anymore.
Oh, it would totally play. Are you kidding?
Oh, it would totally play. It would play so high. Come on.
Dude, we just need that. He just hasn't been back. Dude,
people would go crazy. What
do you
think,
if John Elway were to do the intro, was on the court with a mic or something for the game one of a round of the playoffs, do you think it would have the same impact?
Not the same impact. Yeah. People would still go nuts. The noise would be off the chain. But you do have to account for how many Denverites are like?
What year were you?
What year
were you born?
A lot
Harrison?
Of us don't.
So you were 91. Seven when they won their first championship, or six or seven? That's wild to me, man. I don't know, Eric. I don't know if it would have this. I think if Peyton Manning did it or Von Miller, of course. But Peyton Manning, I think it'd have a bigger impact.
There are no.
It might be louder.
New Jacks that are going to Nuggets games. I'll say that first and foremost. These are Denverites.
That is
these
a
are
good
Denverites.
Pointer.
You think? John Elway. Oh my God, dude! It doesn't matter any single Broncos quarterback that gets put on the Jumbotron results in absolute pandemonium in Pepsi Center. Drew Locke gets it. Peyton Manning obviously gets it. John Elway gets it. When they show Von
Drew
Miller,
Locke's gonna have a. Tulak's going to have a 500 record. He'll be shouting out Nuggets in 5
doing
years.
Doing his raps.
You shut your mouth. You shut your mouth.
Oh,
he knows Jeezy, guys.
They kill me, man.
He's 5-1. He's 5-1.
How many white guys know that song?
I don't know that song, but I know Drew Locke, so that's all I need.
I found myself a little bit, just a little bit, not a lot, just a little bit, rooting for Dirk in this game. I really like Dirk.
Mm.
I'm a big Dirk fan. Great.
Dude, Dirk is one of my top 5 favorite players.
When he goes for
seven
for seven in the first few minutes, I was just like, there's part of me knows he doesn't go off, and I'm just kind of like, oh man, could go for a Dirk game right
now.
Well, also, we covered Dirk's farewell season and saw him where it looked like if he bent down to shoot, his knees might lock and he would never stand up again. So it was really fun for me to, and again, I was younger, so to go back and really watch him with his legs underneath him. You just remember, one of the greatest scorers to ever.
Here's another take for you for Dirk. He wins a championship 2 years later in a tough one. He goes through some really good teams to get it and has one of the greatest playoff runs. I don't think you would know it if you watched him at this point of his career. He was really good. And obviously 2006, he had the MVP years. And he's a really good player. But watching him, it's kind of he shoots and he scores sometimes. But I don't know that he's a guy that can carry a team to a championship. 2 years later, he does.
Yeah, it did kind of seem.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Like an all-star
because the broadcast, the broadcast had that conversation, which was the Dirk conversation right up until he won it. Right? Can this guy do it? And Hugh, it's crazy to listen to Hugh be defending Dirk. Right? I know. If you're a fanatic past 2011, Dirk's royalty, no one gets to take shots at Dirk. But you remember, he was a guy who was too soft,
and he almost looked like it though.
He also had a much better roster around him. He had a great roster around him.
I mean, this is the real truth of basketball, right? Is that, yes, it always takes great teams. We always whittle it down to, so-and-so carried them. But very few times has it been a player with, a bunch of scrubs around him that have advanced too far, I mean?
You need teams, but Dirk did carry them. Sure. That 11 run, he was one of the best players on the planet.
And another important thing to mention about Dirk is that he is the precursor to one of two hair matchups that the Nuggets see back-to-back. First Dirk and then Pau Gasol in the next round that have the exact same mop.
Pau Gasol's hair cannot
actually, get out of here. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Pau's floppy. Yeah.
It's the same.
Bouncy and floppy. Dirk's
we can talk
flowing.
About the quality. I'm just talking about the cut. They had the same cut. They had that flowing caveman cut. Yeah, they did. I absolutely did. I know because I remember being in the stands and holding up a Geico caveman picture to mock Pau Gasol.
Oh, man.
I would
have
done the same for
so
Dirk.
Good, man. You got him so good.
Well, I know.
The hair is not the same, Eric. Stop it.
I won't. I will not stop it.
Dirk's had way more
volume.
Listen,
again, you're talking quality. Dirk, listen.
This is absurd.
It's the same cut.
Do we have any more notes? Do we have any more notes from this game? Anything else to kind of chew on? No.
No.
Yeah, I think that's all I've got here. Birdman had a mid-range jumper. Not sure if we've hit
I do have one thing. I do have one thing. Changed. Obviously, we've talked a lot about it, but Melo, to me, he got hot in the fourth, and he wasn't the reason they blew it open, but he really contributed quite a bit to it. Like when he hit that transition three, and the nothing but net high archer goes in. Like to me, those are sort of the shots that separate good teams from great teams. I think this Nuggets team without Melo would have been a playoff team. They might have been the New Orleans Hornets, but they would have been a good team, you know. With Melo, when he played well, like he didn't play well in quarters 1, 2, and 3. Denver's up 4. Denver played great, had a lot of contributors, but they're up 4. He starts rolling, and it's just a knockout. And I wonder, his game reminds me of MPJ so much. I think MPJ can fill in, but when I watch him and the shots that he hits and just knowing how big of momentums they are, it makes me wonder, can the Nuggets get to a point where it's like Jokic and Murray, Jokic and Murray, Jokic and Murray, Jokic, Murray, MPJ, boom, that's the knockout punch. Once MPJ is, you know, he only needs to have like one quarter where he's hitting shots, and those back-to-back threes are going to be the thing that opens up the game. I see so many similarities between them.
Totally, because this 2009 team, they could hit you from so many angles.
Yeah.
When Mel was going too, it was just unstoppable. It was like the tour de force. But it's that same. It can be the same thing with this current team. Like they got so many contributors. If MPJ is having an offensive impact like Mel could have for stretches, they'll hit you from so many different spots. You won't be able
to
keep up.
If MPJ's a 25-point-per-game scorer, and 7 or 8 of those points are just him scoring buckets, just creating them. Like, that's huge. Those 7 or 8 points are what – those are positive points. They extend a lead every single time. And I don't know. It's one of those things that watching this team – the Nuggets just don't have any of those guys. Will Barton maybe sometimes, but not that often. They don't have any guys that you're like, oh, yeah, he just went on this run and they opened it up. Sometimes Murray, but that's more the system. Just another X factor that I feel like that's what Melo was. All right, well, that's it for this one. This was a fun series. I'm excited for this series a lot more. The New Orleans one I had fun with, but by the time Nuggets were going to a blow, maybe it was that awful broadcast, but there was a certain point where I was ready to kind of move on. This one I'm
– Don't knock my guy, Mark Fine. That's your guy. That guy was on fire the whole series.
What happened? Where's Mark Fine now? I'm going to do some research.
He was on the TNT.
We
now
might have
we're
to look
on
up some fashion trends of 2009, too, because, again, it's only 11 years, but there. I just feel like there's a lot of even scanning the crowd. This is how dumb I am. Whenever they cut to the crowd, I'm looking at people, just seeing how different they look, you know? And there's some weird looks.
Yeah. I was also going to ask you that. I'm sure you just ran out of time on the podcast, but you were definitely going to ask George Karlaub about his suits in these playoffs, right?
I was very close. Rick Carlisle, by the way, also had a suit that was like 3 times too bigger than the suits you wear now, so it's very funny.
It was like the dark khaki too.
Dark
Byron
khaki.
Scott had one of those.
Dark
also.
Khaki suit, so 2009.
So I think Mark Fine is still with TNT, and he
legend.
Is the substitute host for Ernie, which never happens. Ernie's never needed a substitute.
That's Mark
ever.
Fine? Yeah.
He's definitely not the substitute host.
Yeah.
Host. No way. They've had other guys on there.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Has been. He may be. He may be in the.
He's out.
In the,
he's out. Okay.
In the back. They may have shoved him in the back. Yeah.
Third on the depth chart.
Well, maybe we'll have him hop on the pod here soon. Oh, look at what do we have here? A screen share of Pau Gasol. Look at that.
Alan Herrick.
All right, it's time to get out of here. All right, Harrison, why don't you send us off? What do you got for us? More Manscaped?
I wish we had more Manscaped.
Just love talking.
Keep supporting Manscaped, guys.
It actually is
a great partner of ours. We got Green Mountain. Yeah, we got Green Mountain Dental Group to close out the show. The best damn family-owned dentist in the metro area. They're extreme Colorado sports fans, just like all of us. So check them out. Schedule a cleaning, X-ray, exam, and you guys will receive a free Sonicare toothbrush.
I like electric toothbrushes.
Yeah,
I have another thing to push.
I mean, since I started using electric toothbrush, no cavities, no cavities at all.
And also this weekend. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was
going to
say this
go
weekend
ahead.
We dropped a new shirt. In the DNVR locker.
Knucklehead.
We've not only introduced our own mascot, Knucklehead. We're all very proud of him.
What can you tell me about Knucklehead before you get to the shirt? Who is he?
Sure, Knucklehead. Knucklehead is the ultimate fan. Knucklehead is a mascot that's made out of a foam finger. I've been thinking about making Knucklehead for almost a year. When I met with Brandon and Ryan like almost 2 years ago, I was like, I definitely want to make a mascot for you. Oh, Brian instead of Ryan. Sorry, Brian. Brian, gotcha. So when I met with Brian, I was like, I want to make a mascot. And they were like, yes, please make a mascot. And so we were going to make our mascot a goat. And then we ultimately decided to make him. I was trying to think of the one thing that like really encapsulated what fandom is all about. And so I made him a foam finger that is kind of a dick and will fight you and fight anybody that crosses him wrong. But we have a new shirt out. It says Fight for Denver with Knucklehead in his fighting position. Because, you know, like, we care a lot about Denver. We care a lot about the city. We're in a weird time now. We have to sort of, you know, start to look at really supporting the things you care about and you want to stick around, which is weird to say. But and that extends beyond us. That's all of our friends that we talk about every night. That's Blake Street Tavern. That's Sports Column. That's any restaurant that you're interested in continuing after we're all let out of our houses again. Like, you really do need to support these people. And so we made this shirt to support ourselves, but also to wear as sort of a symbol on your chest that you give a damn. You care about Denver, and it means something to you. So check it out. We're pretty proud of it. And, you know, let's go.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow night.